Welcome to Digital Health Talks. Each week, we meet with healthcare leaders making an immeasurable difference in equity, access, and quality. Hear about what tech is worth investing in and what isn't as we focus on the innovations that deliver. Join Megan Antonelli, Janae Sharp, and Shahid Shah for a weekly No BS deep dive on what's really making an impact in healthcare.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Health Impacts Digital Health Talks. This is Megan Antonelli, and I am so excited to welcome my friend, Rachel Weisberg. Rachel is a powerhouse woman in health IT who has been breaking barriers and building bridges for over two decades. And maybe even more. I've just known her for almost two decades. Hi, Rachel. How are you?
Hey, Megan. It's great to thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Great to see you. And, you know, I don't want to out us as having worked in healthcare for two decades, but it has been a bit since the first health impact. And where were you with, I want to say,
Iron Mountain
back then? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell our audience a little bit about, you know, your journey from there and how you got into healthcare and, you know, how you got to Natera now.
So I always tell my story. And I just kind of exactly how I got into healthcare. This isn't meant to be Debbie Downer in any way. It all ends positive. So when I was 9 years old, and I've shared this. So I grew up in Southern California. We've already kind of dated ourselves. The Bonaventure, if anyone remembers, was like the place to go when we were kids. It was like this cool new hotel. And I remember it was... I don't remember what time of year it was, but my parents took my brother and I, and they said, okay, we're going to go to LA. We're going to go out to the Bonaventure. We're going to spend a weekend in the Bonaventure. I was so excited. And when we had just the ordeal of getting there, we only had one room. I had to hide in the back because we were only allowed to have two people there. They're gaming the system so we could all get into this hotel room. We spent the night, they spent the weekend, my mom, my dad, my brother and I, we spent the whole weekend in LA. We went to the Japanese gardens, and then it was the night before, it was our last night in LA, and my parents sat my brother and I down and they shared with us, my mom had cancer. And she had a really, really rare form of cancer, and that they didn't have a cure for it. When you're 9 years old and you get that message about, you know, and we're talking 40 years ago, 40 plus years ago, obviously healthcare wasn't what it is today. Technology isn't what it is today. Access isn't what it is today. But I remember thinking, you know, being devastated. My mom's still alive. So that's why I said the story ends well. But, you know, I tell the story because certainly there's a lot of fear. We didn't have access, but my father, and some know this, was a very well-renowned radiologist. And because of who he was, my mom was able to get access to clinical trials. She was able to get access to care and doctors, and she's alive today. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, certainly there's been a lot of treatments and a lot of things that go with it, but it's when you have that access to the care and you have somebody in the system, your experience with healthcare is so different. And even the gap between, you know, 40 years ago versus where it is today. And I don't know if it's gotten better or if it's gotten worse, but certainly I've realized at that moment, and ever since then, I've had a passion for everyone should have that same opportunity that my mother had. And I've spent since I got out of college and I got out of school, just kind of working my way up and working in on the vendor side, on the provider side, on the, I like to call it a provider, because at the end of the day, we're all in this together. But I have never sat and I've never worked in an actual health system, although I've been a candy striper and I volunteered and I've walked the halls and I've done all those great things. I've never actually been employed by a hospital. But I have spent time working with all those organizations. And I knew really early on that I'm not, if anyone who knows me, I don't have the best bedside manner. So being a physician wasn't really for me. I tell it like it is. I don't really sugarcoat things, but it wasn't where I needed to go. So how do I get into healthcare? How do I feel like I can still be impactful and be part of this community, part of providing that access? And that's where I leaned into technology. And so I've spent, you know, I started, my very first job was actually selling pagers. So again, dating myself, But, you know, hospitals, I think, you know, there are still pagers that exist out there. It's probably the only place where they still exist, maybe one, but it really exposed me to the operational side of healthcare, the technology side of healthcare. And I've spent my career just kind of moving in there, moving out of sales, and really leading partnership strategies and thinking about how do we do better as lots of great tech. There's so much technology out there, but how do we ensure that the technology is solving the problem that we need it to solve and that it's fitting, you know, it's impacting the healthcare the way it needs to. And I believe that that's a big disconnect with a lot of technology companies that are out there. So, you know, we've talked about you and I met at Iron Mountain. Obviously, I was at Sirius, which was bought by CDW. After that, I really pivoted and said, what do I want to do? I think that we as women, a lot of us, sometimes it's hard to take that jump or take that risk. And I decided I'm going to go do something on my own. And, you know, I've done this plenty of times for a lot of people, and you're not able to either make the call, or you're not able to say yes because you're waiting on somebody else, or maybe you're working in an environment that you really just isn't, you're not thriving in, and it's not great. So instead, I started my own business where I'm able to work with healthcare technology companies and provide that whole level of experience that I have. And so currently, as you know, I'm working with Natera, a startup out of Israel, and that's been a journey of its own, learning lessons learned all along. But it's this whole idea of we need to do a better job of building what I call that ecosystem. And it's not just the providers, it's not just the vendors, but it's this whole community of how we all work together. And together we can solve problems. And so that's kind of where I like to sit, in that understanding what is the business problem, how can we help, and then really bringing in those partnerships. But I would say being on your own is a little scary, but it's also really rewarding. And you get it, you're speaking to somebody else that does.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you all day long for everything you said. But mostly the bedside manner thing, I relate to that in my core. I would have made a great doctor if only I were nicer. But, you know, but I think that the part of what has always struck me about what you do and how you work with the health systems, you know, at every company you've ever been at, is that it's never about sales. It's always been about partnerships, right? It's always been about understanding the problem. And honestly, I think I've seen you literally change companies to fit the problems that the clients were facing, right? Yeah. And so talk about that a little bit. And kind of, you know, maybe there's some experiences or what have you in that, you know, where did you realize that traditional sales was not going to be the right model for healthcare?
Maybe it's just innate. I don't. Just maybe growing up in a household of, you know, a father being a physician and being surrounded by doctors and nurses my entire life. I think it's, you know, you hear some of the pain, you hear what's going on in that space. And, you know, I lean on my dad. My dad didn't do anything alone as a radiologist. He had great partners with Philips and Fuji and Siemens, right? They were always leaning into him to say, hey, what do you think of this? How do we develop that? And really thinking about not doing anything in a box. I think that sometimes great ideas and technology, we have these great ideas of technology, but you have to recognize the market. Is the market ready for it? You know, do they have the access to buy it, and do they have the ability to adopt it? And I think maybe just growing in that household and understanding the vernacular and hearing what was going on, I think it's about growing, and I think it's about evolving, right? I think that that's what's core. And everywhere I've ever worked, it was important to me to work for somebody that I could learn something from. And once I was done learning, then it was time to go. And if I look at my progression of my career, starting in sales to, you know, leading healthcare practices, to leading go-to-market strategies, to, you know, working in operations, sales operations, clinical, you know, I think it's just been this evolution of how do I continue to build on what I know and what's going to challenge me next. And that's, I think, you see, if you look at the evolution of my career, started in sales, then became a sales manager, then became a VP of sales. And they're like, oh, I want to get into this operations thing because sales isn't really working well for us here. Or we need to think about it differently. We need to operationalize it differently. Put me in a role where I can help impact the speed of that and ensure that we're aligned on our goals and objectives for the customer. So I think that that's just an evolution of me in saying, here's an area that needs help. Here's an area that needs help. The skills that I have from before, I can apply that. And so that's progressively, I think it's just don't be afraid to grow. It's okay to not know. It's okay to not have the answer. It's okay to, you need to learn. And that's what I've really tried to do.
Right. Well, and I think, I mean, what you're saying and what, you know, what I think of when I think of you, I mean, and also, I mean, just in general in healthcare, that everybody is sort of, you know, it's like a community of learners, mm-hmm. right? Whether or not you found yourself going to, you know, finishing and going to medical school and staying within that track, we all work, you know, we all have this desire to learn, to understand. And that's where that partnership comes from, to understand the problems, to get to the solutions, to really fix healthcare. And as you're going back to the story about your mom, mm-hmm. you know, that access issue, that seems like it shouldn't be that hard, right? I mean, if the science is there, if the medicine is available, then everybody should get access. Yeah. But that we all know that's 100% not the case. And, you know, and we've been at work trying to fix it for 20 years. And I'm sure there were people trying to work it for the 20 years before. And, you know, and it's a, you know, it's hard, but it, there's also this shared, you know, sort of collective understanding that there's reasons it's hard and we can get through it, you know? Yeah. And I think that the community of the country that we're in has been interesting. And of course, you and I have done events all around the country, you know, lots in New York, but we've uh-huh. done stuff in Florida and Chicago. But we're both right now, at least SoCal girls with maybe uh-huh. some toes in New York and other places. But, you know, it's interesting when you think of the community and, you know, people uh-huh. used to always say healthcare's local. And, you know, I'm seeing that shift a little bit in that now that we've had healthcare be as digitized and, mm-hmm. and accessible, that also expectations of what the healthcare experience is actually becoming more universal. And it's not as different in mm-hmm. Southern California as it is in, you know, Chicago. You know, maybe the rural and urban differences mm-hmm. are huge, but, you know, you see a lot and you work in health systems that are tiny and rural to some of the biggest in the country. Tell me a little bit about what you're seeing and then anything, you know, in terms of what you've seen about kind of the changes in Southern California in particular.
Well, I think without getting political, you know, we are where we are. I mean, that's the reality of where we are today. We've recently passed, you know, there's laws that are coming, there's new bills that are coming. I think the biggest, to your point, is we're trying to learn from each other. So how do we share information? How do we communicate information? How do we ensure that we're providing our community with the best access and the best care possible for our patients and our communities? I think as you get out of, you know, something that's the beauty of urban is access is there. Everything's there. As you move further and further away, I think that's where it's getting a little harder and harder. The rural communities, the reimbursements that are going to hit them, these rural hospitals, there's a concern that those doors may close. There's a huge, you know, certainly a lot of the work that I'm involved in right now is how do we keep those doors open? Are there things, are there tools, are there technology? Can we partner with the larger health systems in the community to help those rural hospitals stay afloat? I think that that's what everyone's trying to figure out because everyone's suffering from the same problems in that we don't have enough space to provide, we don't have enough beds and resources to care for the patients that we have, regardless if you're at a large academic medical center or if you're all the way down to, you know, these small critical access hospitals. It's just that the volume and the resource don't exist. And it's just as you get further and further away, it becomes harder and harder to figure out, you know, how do you provide those resources? And the reality of it is you're not going to be able to do that without technology. We don't have people anymore. You can't go find nurses and doctors. We have what we have. The resources are limited. So I think that that's one piece of it is just in that people, but then obviously the funding. we've got to figure out how to fund things. And so I think that's where people are scratching their head a little bit right now, thinking, well, I give an example, working with the health system now, we were getting ready to do a project with them and then came back, you know, our budget's been slashed by X. This is something that's really important to us. You know, how do we want to move forward, but this is all we've got. And so it was, you know, a conversation with the executive team where I am and saying, we're here to serve, we're a partner. You know, because of us, they can deliver the care that they need. We need to step up and we need to make it happen. And we did. So I think that those are the things that we have to do. Going back to Southern California, it is so fun to be back there. I think if I think about, that's how I started. You know, when I look at how do you get your name out there? How do you get introduced to the community? How do you meet the partners, the providers, that whole ecosystem? They're all at HIMSS. And so, you know, very early in my career, I was very active. And obviously a group of us have come back to SoCal HIMSS to really help. And it's fun. So if I think about, you know, what are the highlights of my day? I said it last time, you know, when we got together to do a board retreat for HIMSS SoCal, obviously we were all at the event last week. Everyone's there because we want to be there. So it's different. You're part of something because it's volunteer.
Right.
And I mean, that's the part I love about it is that we're all trying to figure out how to solve problems together. The landscape's certainly changing with, you know, there's a little more dominance. So, you know, larger systems have come in. There's less, you know, you've seen that the acquisition piece play out. There's still, though, I mean, what surprises me is you still have in Southern California these really strong community health systems. I mean, look at Eisenhower Medical Center in Rancho Mirage. I mean, that's out, you know, that's far, but they're surviving and thriving, and they're not, but my understanding is they're not going to get acquired anytime soon because they're profitable. And I think that that's some of the uniqueness of Southern California. I don't know if that's like that everywhere, but
yeah, no, I do think it's unique and it's interesting. And it, you know, and as much as, you know, obviously UCLA and Cedars are kind of that, you know, you think of it, you know, and Kaiser, you know, sort of mm-hmm. the three, those community hospitals do have a very big mm-hmm. presence. And I certainly among HIMSS and among the voice of, you know, kind of innovation and people who are implementing new things. And certainly the Children's Hospital also, you know, CHOC, now Rady's CHOC, you know, they all have, CHLA and all of that. So it is a very interesting and diverse sort of group of health systems, mm-hmm. all with different needs, but functioning within, you know, this, you know, sort of sprawling of Southern California. And then, you know, and it covers quite a bit of different area as mm-hmm. well. But yeah, speaking to that, of course, congratulations, right? You were just voted in as programs chair. Yay. for HIMSS SoCal.
Yeah, that'll be fun. You're helping.
That'll be fun, exciting. And it is Mary Beth has done a great job kind of bringing mm-hmm. that group back and kind of building momentum in Southern California for HIMSS. And then you're also involved in CHIME and, you know, other groups, particularly women in health IT. Mm-hmm. And of course, we did have the conference last week, the mm-hmm. Leadership Summit. So any good takeaways from there as you were attending it? And
yeah, I think it's to be bold. You know, I think that what I took away from that and just maybe controversial. But, you know, I think women and men have very different leadership styles. And what I saw happen, you know, women tend to want to know the why and to understand the how. And you really, like, it's like, what are the feelings behind it? I want to get to know the personality because I work with, you know, there's more of this collaboration and working and building the team. And I'm sure there, and I don't want to discount it and say all women are this way, all men are that way. But what I've seen, and especially what I saw from as we sat there and we listened, there was a lot more collaboration in how do we bring your teams together or how we promote this community just internally of our own organization where people want to be here and they want to be part of what we're doing and they feel comfortable and they feel safe and they can share how they're feeling. And maybe you saw something that, gosh, if we could only do it this way, it would be so much better. And I think it's so important to open up those doors to feel safe, because I think a lot of times people are afraid to say their voice because it's perceived potentially as negative, or it's perceived as it comes across as a criticism. versus, hey, we're all in this together and I just want to help us get there faster or be more productive, be better for our client. I felt a really alarming sense of that. And I thought that was really interesting. I think a lot of us sit in boardrooms where we may be the only woman there. And it's, you know, people say lean in, be a little stronger, but we just have a different approach.
100%. Yeah.
It's that mothering instinct. It's just that nurturing instinct that we have.
Right. And it goes a little bit, you know, also that curiosity, right? The questions that sort of constant questioning that my husband might say, okay, you can stop now. But at the same time, it is, you know, wanting to understand so that you make the right decisions. And I think that was a big theme there, both organizationally, but also people-wise.
And a lot of it is when you go to one of the things, and there was one of the women was talking about, and now I wish I would have written it down before we got on this call, but it was the recognition of, you know, your change is difficult. And so, you know, how do you get people to change? And there's a realization of one is they need to know why, right? Why is this changing? How is this changing? And what's the implication to themselves? But I think the thing that we overlook a lot is this person capable of making that change? And so we're asking for change of our teams, but maybe the people that are and people there aren't capable of becoming what we need them to be. I'm not saying we need to get rid of those people, but acknowledging where people are in that journey, because there's nothing more frustrating being asked to do something when you're not even capable to do it, right? So understanding what are the capabilities of our teammates or people on our teams so that we can really maximize, you know, make them happy, maximize their potential.
Right.
Keep them.
Right.
And we talk about in healthcare operating at the top of your license, right? It's the same thing in, you know, in any job. It's how do I keep people productive? And if you're asking someone to do something they don't want to do, they're not going to be productive.
No. And you can ask them 6 ways till Sunday and they'll never do it. So, you know,
that was something that I found.
Yeah. Well, shout out to Sam King, you know, the man behind the curtain of the Women's Leadership Summit, but he does a great job in bringing together what was an incredibly impressive group of women. I mean, the first time I was completely blown away. I didn't think I could be more impressed
than Agreed.
And I was. So he did an amazing job of kind of pulling that together in such a nice venue. And then, you know, as we are approaching, you know, I hate to say it because it's gone too fast, but the end of the summer. And of course, we have lots of events coming up this September. But one that sticks out in the theme of women and leadership with our friend Rebecca and Soar, you'll be at that as well. Is that your first time going or?
It is my first time going. It's something that's been on my radar for a while. And unfortunately, you know, calendar scheduling just didn't align. So this time I put it on my calendar very far in advance and I blocked it. And there's a couple things that have come up. Like, nope, can't do that because I love seeing who's going to be there. I mean, what an amazing group of women that are coming together. It's just so nice to have a forum where we can, and it's like I said, it's a safe space, sharing, helping each other. I think we don't do enough of that. I think that it's all about, you know, we need to do better at helping each other. I remember my first mentor, you know, sitting me down and kind of walking me through, okay, what are the things you have to have? What are the things you want to have? Where are you are now? Making these lists and really thinking about that's kind of how I started. What makes me tick? What gets me excited? What are the things that matter to me? What are the things I can't live without? I mean, it's just little things like that. But I'm sure, you know, as you look at those are the things I think we get out of a conference like SOAR is I was on a call earlier today and we were talking about how, you know, healthcare innovation, you know, no one wants to go first, you know, but it's even just in life. I don't like to go first in anything. I will. I mean, I trust me, I will do it. I don't have a problem. But anytime somebody else has already done something before me, I want to learn about that. What did you do? How did you do it? What should I definitely not do? Right. And it's just as simple as something like that. What are the things I need to avoid? And that's the beauty of an event like SOAR is I think you can learn so much from other women that have trailblazed paths forth before you. So you don't have to figure it out on your own. Learn from others and see what worked and what didn't.
Yeah. Well, it's funny to think back. I mean, to think back even to whenever it is we started all these events in like 2011 and 12, you know, and the room, right? I mean, I can think of several of them. And I, of course, have always leaned towards trying to get as many women in the room as possible. And when we think of both HIMSS SoCal and some of the CIO forums, as well as Health Impact, 10 or 15 years ago, where we couldn't get a woman in the room. I mean, there was literally, you know, there was us and maybe a few others, you know, who were, you know, whether they worked in the healthcare on the provider side or the vendor side, but it was not, you know, it wasn't even. And then to think that we could, you know, last week fill a room where there were some men, but it was mostly women and all impressive leaders. And so, you know, while we can say, you know, it's still not good enough and there's a lot of change that needs to happen, we've come a long way.
Well, and I think that we just look at what's happening even just with leadership within health systems. I think that part of what's happening is nursing has become such a focal point, and it's a field predominantly dominated by women. So that's where a lot of the leadership is coming from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's it's so exciting and so beneficial, because not only are the nurses, you know, they're just so close to the care and the operations of care, that what they provide both from a, you know, problem solving and innovation perspective has just made such a difference in kind of the dialogue that we've had. I think we saw that in June, and excited to see what comes out of it. So as we look ahead in our last few minutes, we always kind of, with our five good things in healthcare, we like to focus on what's good and, you know, kind of what you're most excited about in healthcare. What comes to mind? Thinking about, you know, and it could be
AI.
1 year, 2 years. Good answer.
No, I think that, I mean, I say that, and I do think that there's a huge promise for AI. There's a huge promise for tools. And I said this from the very beginning. What am I most excited about? I mean, you and I said we met probably 20 years ago, and you talked about the promise of healthcare, you talked about the technology, and you know, how far behind healthcare was. Granted, we're still behind, but it's so exciting to see that the industry has caught up to the technology and is willing to adopt the technology. Because without the technology, without the adoption of the tools, we're not going to be able to deliver the care that we need to. And I joke about AI. I'm starting to use AI with everything that I do. Greatest thing ever, by the way, for if you're ever looking for how do I make this sound a little bit better in an email. Great tool. But just even for notes. I mean, we're on calls all day long. And how do I get the notes out? How do I remember these things? Just to have those note takers and they summarize it for you, it goes out to everybody. I mean, that stuff shaves off so much time. I realize those are like just little things that I'm doing, but it's taking away from some of the time that it's alleviating time for me to go back and do other things. And so when I look at where healthcare is going, I see that promise. You look at, you know, some of the ambient tools, the ambient technologies, even some of these like AI call centers, we're not removing the clinicians. We're not removing, but we're just helping like, get this off my plate so that I can focus on why I got back into healthcare in the first place. And I am pretty ambitious. I believe we'll see it by the time we're going to see impact. It's not like we're going to have to wait 10, 15, 20 years. I think in 5 years, we're going to see a difference. And yeah. I'm excited because I can't walk away from this without seeing something impacted. It would be such a bummer to say, here you go, and you know, hand it over to our next generation. But I think that for those of us where we are, this generation, we're going to see big impact of what we can do.
Yeah, no, that is 100%. I mean, I think that what's amazing about the set of tools that have come into play in the last 3 to 5 years is that they make a difference in the places that the physicians and clinicians and nurses want them to make a difference.
You know? Yeah.
And get, you know, as much as you know, it's getting rid of the busy work, but that was where the friction existed. And that is the friction. And that's what slows people down. So it is super exciting to see.
Well, I just laugh. What was it? It was like 15 years ago. Do you remember? And there was that drawing, that crayon drawing that little girl put out about, do you remember that the picture? She was drawing what it was, you know, this is what it looks like when I go to my doctor's office visit. And there's her and her mom are sitting on the bed on the, you know, whatever the exam bed. And then there's the doctor in the corner with his back to the, you know, talking like this, what's going on? You know, that was 15 years ago.
Yeah, that is amazing. I know. And that it took us this long. Uh-huh. And, you know, well, you think about it. I mean, what, you know, Iron Mountain was documentation, you know, it was all about.
So we had all your physical records.
Right. All your,
and all your charts.
Let's get that paper on, you know, into the computer. So it has been a long journey to get us here. And it's been, you know, and I think that there's lots of impacts that have been made to both patient care and the provider experience. So, but it is exciting definitely to see what's to come. And I think your point about where, you know, healthcare in some ways, in, you know, they've kind of caught up. I mean, as I think about working with the Emerge Americas team right now, you know, they've got a, you know, sort of the vertical on finance and a vertical on national security, and healthcare is right there at the table, right? Because the innovations and the technology adoption is, it's fast and it's happening. Yeah. Whereas 10 years ago, we would have felt like, you know, oh, we're not there. And we used to compare ourselves to the airline industry and say, why can they do it and we can't? And I think, you know, right.
We're begging it.
Right. We have done it. There's still a lot of room for improvement, but we've gotten there. Well, thank you so much, Rachel, for joining us. Tell the audience where they should reach you. Is LinkedIn your favorite?
LinkedIn's the best place to get me. I am responsive. If I haven't responded within a day, just be patient. But that really is the best way to get me. I do make sure I check that and I respond. So
absolutely. Well, I encourage you. She's an incredible partner and an incredible resource, understanding, you know, kind of the ecosystem, as well as basically knowing everyone there is to know in healthcare. So thanks so much for joining us, Rachel. Thank you to our audience. This is Megan Antonelli with Health Impact Live, signing off for Digital Health Talk.
Thank you for joining us on Digital Health Talks, where we explore the intersection of healthcare and technology with leaders who are transforming patient care. This episode was brought to you by our valued program partners, Automation Anywhere, revolutionizing healthcare workflows through intelligent automation, Natera, advancing contactless vital signs monitoring, Elite Groups, delivering strategic healthcare IT solutions, CellPoint, securing healthcare identity management and access governance. Your engagement helps drive the future of healthcare innovation. Subscribe to Digital Health Talks on your preferred podcast platform. Share these insights with your network and follow us on LinkedIn for exclusive content and updates. Ready to connect with healthcare technology leaders in person? Join us at the next Health Impact event. Visit healthimpactforum.com for date and registration. Until next time, this is Digital Health Talks, where changemakers come together to fix healthcare.